When people talk about things that hurt them, one of the most common things is some version of, aren't you over it yet? Sometimes people say that bluntly, but sometimes they say it without realizing they're saying it. So they'll say something like, oh, I didn't realize that was still bothering you. Or, oh gosh, hasn't it been 2 years? And that is a version of, oh, I thought you should be better by now. And so if we make that space to include it over time, I think that's a shift in the conversation.
Welcome to The Lisa Show, where we take a good look at life. Hey, it's Lisa. And before we dive in, let me just ask you, if you haven't already, please check out our monthly newsletter. You can find the link in our show notes. It's really fun. We always have like a little prize, a little bonus, something that we think you might like. So go over. It's our gift to you. Now, today we're talking about one of those things that I wish everyone talked about more, grief. And before we get into it, let me just say that there's something in this episode for everyone. If you've been here for a while, you know my story. My husband, Christopher, passed in 2020. Grief is a part of my everyday experience now. And I've seen the ways that grief is always nearby, especially in this stage of life. You've probably seen this too. We all know someone who is grieving in our family, in our friend circles, in our community. And so this episode has two focuses. First, how to be an amazing friend when someone you love is grieving. Exactly what to say, to not say, what it means to help, and how to avoid the biggest well-meaning mistakes that a lot of people make when trying to support a griever. And second, for those of us who are in it, how to keep moving forward in your healing, even when the people around you don't do or say the right things. What it means if you don't feel like you're doing this right. Let me introduce you to our guest and my new friend, Leanne Friesen.
I'm an ordained minister. I currently work leading a group of churches, but I also am a grief educator and an author and speaker. And that's something that I often joke is kind of my weird side job, but that's what I do. I run a grieving support page called Grieving Room on Instagram, which is a rather large community. And that's something that I do in my downtime, so to speak, because I feel passionate about it and I care about it.
And as you'll hear in her story, Leanne's experience with grief is both professional and personal.
I was always really interested in how we make space for death and loss. And then I became an ordained pastor, and I still really cared about this because so many people in my church, in my life, experience loss, and they would come to me for support. Of course, I would officiate funerals, and I would sit at deathbeds. And so I so often saw how people going through grief or loss or suffering didn't really find space in our culture. And then in the midst of all that, my own sister in 2013, her name was Roxanne, she was my oldest sister, she died. Now, I felt like I would be somewhat well-equipped to deal with grief. I dreaded it, but I thought, you know, I share this often, I've got a bit of a head start. And then I discovered that I really didn't, that it was a really different experience when I went through it myself. And learning what I needed in that time really gave me insight even more into this sense of, wow, people really struggle to find space for grief and they struggle to support grievers. And I began more and more to study that more, went back and did more education. I got a certificate in death and bereavement, a post-grad certificate, began speaking about this more, writing about this more, and then ultimately deciding to start this Instagram page, Grieving Room, and write the book, Grieving Room, about giving grief room.
When Leanne talks about giving grief room, she's referring to something that's difficult for most people to do, whether they're dealing with their own loss or trying to support someone else who's grieving. By default, most of us have an instinct that responds to grief by trying to push it away, find distractions, explain why it's not as sad or as painful as it seems, or find coping methods to drown it out. But like a lot of things, that's just not how healing works. This is especially hard for people who are experiencing loss for the first time or who are trying to play a supportive role to someone else without firsthand experience.
What I wish people who wanted to support grievers or hadn't yet had a deep grief themselves, what I wish they understood is that you don't need to fix a griever. and you don't need to make a griever feel better. And I know that seems counterintuitive because when someone that we love is hurting, what do we want to do? We want to say, well, my job is to make them feel better. So if I'm at the funeral home and they're crying, I need to say the thing and maybe they'll cry less. Or if they're telling me they're going through a really difficult time in their grief, I want to say something or do something that will take the pain away. And that's when we say things like, well, like, don't forget they're in a better place. Or we say, at least they're not suffering anymore, with this idea that then they'll go, oh, now I feel better. And we do all those wonderful things like bring meals and offer to babysit and offer to take them out for coffee. But if we release ourselves from saying, I'm not going to make them feel better, because grievers will not feel better for a long time. And a lot of times they don't even want to feel quote unquote better. They're like, this is where I am. And sometimes their grief is such a deep connection to the person that they lost that to feel good feels like a betrayal, especially in early grief. And I often say, if you shift from, I'm not trying to make them feel better, I want them to feel loved and supported, which I think becomes a very different thing. So then we're saying, what can I say that will let them know I love them? What can I say that can let them know they're not alone? And it takes pressure off us. And it often avoids things that grievers find painful, like those cliches or the things that make them feel really misunderstood.
When you're supporting a loved one through grief, you don't have to make them feel better. Not only that, but trying to make someone feel better could backfire because that's not the right goal. And it's my job to fix this mentality can do more harm than good. We can't control how someone feels their grief, but we can help them feel our love, and that's the right way to approach it. Leanne has some examples of what it looks like when people fall into the trap of trying to fix each other's grief and the difference it makes when we just love each other instead.
We often encourage people, just don't think about it or focus on the positive or take your mind off it. So let me just give you one simple example. A friend of mine, after she lost a parent, she says, my husband, today we were going to go and go on this nice long bike ride. And I woke up and I was just weepy. And it just hit me. And he said, just try not to think about it. You know, don't let it ruin your day. And he said that lovingly, like in his mind, He was like, oh, now she's really sad and maybe this will ruin her day. So like, just don't think about it. Don't dwell on it. And that was really frustrating for her because he didn't understand that what she needed was room. And so what would room look like in that moment would be, oh, I'm sorry, this is a tough day. What do you need? Or It could look like, oh, tell me about what's on your mind. What are you missing about him? Or do you need a little while and then we can reassess if we want to do the bike ride? Like if you want to go take some time and then we can decide. So it's making that space. And a simple way to make room for grief is giving people that space. Think about like a special occasion, right? You're throwing a Christmas party, you invite your grieving friend. It's giving them that space to be whatever they need to be. So an example would be, you know, I'm going to invite you to this party. So our tendency might be, I'm not going to invite them because they'll be too sad. Mm-hmm. But invite them anyway, because they don't want to be forgotten. But saying to them, I'm going to invite you to this party and I want you to know a couple things. I want to invite you because you still matter to me. First of all, you don't have to come if you don't feel up to it. And that's okay. Or you can tell me you're coming. And if at the last minute you need to change your mind, I'm going to totally understand. And if you come and halfway through you realize you need to leave or you need to go to the bathroom and lock the door or find a quiet space, you can do that too. And if you come and you're not the life of the party and you're sitting in a corner and maybe you get a little weepy, that's okay too. All of those things are giving room and saying, here's how you still fit in my life.
Making, or as Leanne says, giving room for grief means making a person and their pain welcome. It's saying, you can feel what you need to feel, and that's not a burden to me. I love this approach. And Leanne gets even more specific about the ways to do this. When you're supporting a loved one with any painful situation, you might have the impulse to avoid painful topics because you don't want to cause distress or make things worse. But with grief, this works a little differently.
Some of the simple things are not being afraid to name it, right? Like actually, not just talking about a different way, but starting by talking about it. When we see someone who's had a loss, that we do bring it up. And maybe, you know, it's tricky, you know, maybe you're in a workplace or whatever. You know, what do you say? You say, well, I know you had a loss. I know this might not be where you want to talk about. I want you to know I'm thinking about you. do you want to talk some other time? Or if you want to, we can. So I think one step is initially being willing to bring it up. So just being willing to talk about it at all. Giving grief room is even something as simple as saying the name of the person who died. And so many grievers talk about missing people saying their name, right? Bringing them up in conversation and realizing that's okay. If they start crying, they're probably not upset that they're crying. They cry easily often. And so you don't need to say, oh, I'm so sorry. You can say, do you want to change the subject? You can try and experiment. 9 times out of 10, they're going to say, no, I love talking about them. Thank you for bringing it up.
Being willing to have a conversation, making that offer, that's another way to show someone that you have space for them and their grief. And once you're in that conversation, the same principles apply. You're not responsible for fixing or reducing pain, just listening. Leanne pointed out that being an active listener isn't necessarily difficult, but some people run into more of those unhelpful fixing instincts when trying to talk about grief. She calls that closed conversation, and you'll hear that that's what's happening. The person talking is getting shut down.
It's getting away from this goal of like a closing conversation to an open conversation. So if someone's saying, I'm so mad, I'm so angry, I'm furious at that doctor that they didn't find the diagnosis sooner, it's all their fault. You know, our natural human tendency is to probably want to say, now, you know, I think they did the best they could and it's not really the doctor's fault and those things happen. And again, none of that sounds reasonable, but what does it look like to just let that space be of anger and frustration? You must be so angry. You know, those active listening skills, it must hurt so much. It must feel so frustrating. It must feel so hard. And even realizing that they might not even remember that they said that later, right? And I think about that in terms of my experience with faith, like the number of times people say things like, I'm so mad at God, or I can't believe God didn't heal them for people of faith. And how often people want to quickly fix it. Oh, don't talk that way. And, you know, they're just letting out their very real feelings. And so I think that space to say, this is really difficult, this is really hard.
You can make room for grief by letting someone talk and letting them say things they don't mean or do mean. Either way, it's not your job to police what they say, nor would it help if you did. All you can do that helps in this situation is listen. Some people struggle with this because of a fear that too much time has passed since the loss, that it might be unhealthy to still be talking about it. Leanne pointed out that not only is this a totally normal pattern, but little comments that suggest it's time to move on can be extremely hurtful and counterproductive to someone dealing with grief. It's the opposite of making room. It's taking that room away.
We have a very short shelf life for grief. And we really do forget that 4 or 5 months in, someone's still grieving. It's nobody's fault. Like they just, you know, our lives move on. And so when someone says, you know, 3 years after their child dies, well, today's, I've been really missing them today. And we go, really? My goodness. Like recognizing that it can last a really, really long time. And that in fact, we carry it with us forever and we feel it forever. And so letting that be okay too is a cultural shift. And those are narratives I hear so often from people when people talk about things that hurt them. One of the most common things is some version of, aren't you over it yet? And people say to me, do people really say that? And I said, sometimes people say that bluntly, but sometimes they say it without realizing they're saying it. So they'll say something like, oh, I didn't realize that was still bothering you. Or, oh gosh, hasn't it been 2 years? And that is a version of, oh, I thought you should be better by now. And so if we make that space to include it, and over time, I think that's a shift in the conversation. I remember about 7 or 8 months after my sister died, I was in like this little small group, and it was this woman was doing this therapy course, and she had gathered 3 or 4 people, and each week they were supposed to like tell what they were going through, and she had to practice doing group therapy for them. It was like it was great free therapy. And so I talked about, I kind of got really vulnerable. I was like, I'm still grieving. And it'd been about 9 months, and I was like, and I feel like I missed the window. And I said, I feel like when everyone was asking me how I was doing, I wasn't ready to talk about it. And now I want to talk about it, and I feel like everyone's forgotten. And I said, and I feel like I just want to stand up and yell, I'm still grieving. And I feel like a lot of grievers feel that. You want people to see, you must still find this hard. And what was beautiful in that moment is, I remember the three or four of them all said, we knew you were still grieving. Like that, you know, that's not as big a secret as you thought, you know? And it was so, that moment was such a blessing to me. And they all said, it's not too late. You know, you tell, you can go back and tell people you're ready to talk now, or you can go back and say, I'm still grieving. And if people don't listen, just find other people.
Making room for grief means lending a listening ear with no expiration date. Grief doesn't go away, but having the safety to share when you're ready is healing. And I think that there's a message for those of us on the other side of this too. If you feel like you're carrying a secret because for whatever reason, it doesn't feel like the right time to talk about your grief, find people who will listen. There are communities, support groups, gatherings, all things I've done, by the way, and found some great friends who I know can make room for my grief because they felt something so similar. As long as we're talking about the do's and don'ts of comforting someone after loss, there's one more thing I want you to hear. It was actually from another part of our conversation where I was sharing with Leanne some of my story, and we hit on a phrase that we've both heard plenty of times. A lot of people use it when they're trying to comfort someone after loss, and most people don't know that it actually feels terrible. I almost didn't include this because I don't like to complain about people who are trying to do the right thing. But I had to because Leanne had such an amazing alternative for this one dreadful phrase that I want everyone to know about this. It's a tiny shift in language that makes a night and day difference. So you'll hear both in this, some really great things you can say to comfort someone you love and one bad one, which Leanne will immediately replace in all of our vocabularies with a tweaked version that everyone should know.
One of the best things that some dear friend said to me early on in my grief when I was just feeling absolutely overwhelmed and consumed by it is, and it was such a kindness, she just said, almost instinctively, this sounds horrible. If I were you, I wouldn't know what to do. It sounds like a nightmare. And I was like, thank you. Yeah. It was like the nicest. Everyone else was like, at least he's not suffering. At least this. Mm-hmm. And well, you won't always feel this way, but da, da, da. And she was like, well, that sounds awful. And I'm glad I'm not you. And I was like, thank you.
I don't know why that was like the nicest thing anybody had ever said.
It just changed my brain.
Perfect
because
sense.
It made me not feel crazy. And she wasn't saying, oh, I can't even imagine, or like,
I don't know. Even
she's
imagine.
Just like, you're describing this, and I know it's even worse than you're describing, and I would die.
I know I can't even imagine as well intentional. I try not to be too picky on it because I think there's way worse things, but I often say to people, when I heard people say I can't imagine, I literally wanted to go, well, how nice for you.
That's exactly what I want to say. I'm like, what a great pleasure that you live with that luxury.
I can't even imagine. Well, sucks
to
me because I got to live it. Isn't that a delight? I was like,
I don't have a choice.
Take off the tea and do this. You know what? When I try to imagine what you're going through, it seems so hard. Thank you. Thank you for instead
Thank
of going,
you for
aren't
just
I lucky?
Trying.
Yeah. Aren't
yeah.
I lucky? I don't
Look
have
how
imagine.
Privileged.
Actually, imagine it.
I'm pausing this only to highlight that this is that tiny change of language that makes a world of difference. The problem with saying, I can't imagine, is that it's synonymous with, I have no empathy for you. Hopefully you'll hear in a moment that people on the receiving end of that, like Leanne and I, we know that it's not how it's intended, but it still hurts. It's isolating. So when you feel those words on your lips, all it takes is flipping it around and doing that thing you're saying you can't. Imagine it.
That's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to imagine it. And, you know, you just go, thank you. I know what you mean and what they say. Mm-hmm. And it's their way of saying it's so awful.
Yeah. And I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Yeah.
And I know
say,
that it's
I know
well-intentioned.
I've never, mm-hmm. See, I think like, I have never been through this, but when I imagine it, it breaks my heart.
Yeah.
Like, because you actually can't imagine it. Mm-hmm. Like, I can imagine my husband dying. And the minute I think about it, I get emotional and it feels like the worst thing I could think of. I just don't want to. And I say, I can't imagine. What I'm saying is, thank God I haven't had to live it. Yeah. I actually say to people, try imagining more.
Just
because then
bit.
You would think about what they need. You would actually know what to say. And if you imagined it, you might have a better sense of what would be helpful, right? And why saying things like, at least you can, I don't know if people, at least you can remarry, or at least you're not sick anymore, why you probably wouldn't find that helpful. So I actually say to people, actually try to imagine if you really do want to help.
You may not be able to feel someone else's pain on their behalf, but you can absolutely imagine it. And that willingness to engage with empathy is what's going to turn off the unhelpful instincts, keep conversations open, and whisper to you what people actually need. You know, when someone experiences loss, they gain this obvious and often public vulnerability. Everyone knows you're in pain, and that's where a lot of people get distracted, trying to somehow tackle that big, glaring need. But when you're grieving, you still technically have all the needs you had before. You have to eat somehow and sleep somehow and pay the bills somehow and rake leaves somehow. Support can mean sitting in silence, presence, or active listening, or solving a lesser, more immediate need or problem, like not having to think about eating or what's for dinner, do I have clean clothes, etc. I've come to realize that the loneliness of grief isn't helped by someone standing at a distance. Thoughts and prayers work, but when they inspire and change you to know what to do, say, or how to act in a way that helps, that's transformative. Leanne also has a message specifically for people who are grieving right now.
What I wish grievers, what I would love for them to know about grief is that they're normal. And what many grievers feel is there's something wrong with them. And that's the number one thing. Often if I have a first conversation, you know, a couple months maybe after someone has lost someone they love and they wanted to come and talk to me, certainly when I was working in a church, and they would say, I think I'm going crazy. I think I must be doing this wrong. That was such a common statement. I think I must be doing this wrong. Because however they're feeling just feels like wrong. It feels, you know, I shouldn't be this sad, or it shouldn't be this hard, or it doesn't seem like everyone else struggles this much in their grief. And I say to them, yeah, they do. We just live in a culture where we all kind of hide it a bit, right? Mm-hmm. And so for grievers who think, I've just lost it, I shouldn't be angry. Yeah, sometimes grief makes you really angry. I shouldn't be this apathetic, like I don't care about anything anymore. Yeah, that looks like grief too. And so the number thing I say to people, I go, that's grief. And you just see this relief. Oh, okay, that's grief too. Because we have this idea that we start grieving and we're really, really sad, and then every day we're a little bit less sad. But in fact, first of all, the sadness comes and goes and ebbs and flows, and there's good days and bad days. And secondly, grief can look like such a myriad of feelings besides sadness. Sometimes people cry a lot when they grieve. Sometimes people don't cry at all. And so there's this constant messaging that there's a certain right way to grieve. I don't know where it comes from, but we've all internalized it somewhere. And I would be hard-pressed to think of any griever I've worked with who hasn't had some version in their head of, this mustn't be right because it's too hard, it's too bad, it's too difficult. And the permission to say what you're feeling is grief, and grief is that hard and it is that difficult, and you'll get through it. But it makes perfect sense that you're finding it as hard as you are.
It makes sense that this is so hard. Whether you're angry or sad or having a good day or lonely, there's not one right way to grieve. And Leanne is right. We live in a culture where a lot of grief happens behind closed doors. Thinking back on all the amazing advice that Leanne gave for what to say or not to say to someone who's grieving, how to listen and include and make room for grief in so many different ways, it strikes me how the unhelpful instinct, which says, I need to fix this, I need to avoid, distract from, explain away, reduce the pain of grief, isn't limited to people comforting their loved ones. I think we all do this to some extent. I mean, I remember I was told over and over and read over and over to feel my feelings and not be afraid of grief, to let the wave crash over. Some will knock me off my feet. Others will just wash over. The waves will get less frequent over time, but there will still be intense knock you over ones coming for the rest of your life. And you will learn to live with it. And it won't seem so out of control or so scary when it does. And I found that to be true. I've thought a lot about what I wish I knew leading up to the loss of my husband and the grief that comes with that. And honestly, I think I was as prepared as you can be. I mean, I thought I could control it or at least manage it because I saw it coming. I knew it was inevitable. I read all the books. I studied it. I anticipated stages and checked in with myself. How was I feeling? What did I think? What could I do? What was in my control? What should I let go? And in all of it was this calculated attempt to categorize what was happening to me in real time. If I could go back and say something to my younger self, I would say, just go into it. Just do it. Do it all. Make the same choices. No regrets. There's no hack. This is an important, meaningful part of life that you will hate and always wish didn't happen. And it will bring you good things too, important things, and that will break your brain a little. It will fundamentally change you, and there's no stopping it. There's only making room for it. By the way, one of those fundamental changes was that I found that my relationship with God has become something different. I have learned to give God the benefit of the doubt in a more meaningful way, and I am more confident to take leaps of faith in that regard. When I was at my lowest, He was there, and that is deeply personal to me, but it has also been tested so now I know for me. And everyone says, there isn't deep mourning or grief without deep love. And that is true. Another thing I hate because it's a big cost for loving big. And yet I've benefited from it. Having this experience has given me more love for other people and make more empathy and ways to love them. That was something I didn't expect. Part of making room for grief is making room for new knowledge. There's something sacred that you can find in that waiting and feeling when you're not trying to fix it. Whether you are experiencing or anticipating your own loss or loving someone else in the aftermath of theirs, know that this is easy for no one. Bringing up painful topics isn't easy. Listening without correcting isn't easy. And engaging with empathy when that means imagining some of the worst pain in life is not easy. But you don't have to wonder if you're failing. Most of the time, making room for grief is everything you can do. And in both senses of the phrase, it may feel like everything you can do to just keep from trying to fix it or manage it or reduce it instead of letting the waves roll through. But being a witness to your own grief or being a witness to someone else and loving them through it, that really is everything you can do. And I'll tell you what, I believe in healing, and specifically that healing is powered by grace, which makes up all the difference after everything you can do.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio, hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. This episode was produced by Becca Hurley with help from Erica Price, Blake Morse, and Kenny Mears. Leanne Friesen is the author of Grieving Room, Making Room for All the Hard Things After Death and Loss, and the host of the popular grief support page, Grieving Room, on Instagram. Minister and leads a family of churches in Ontario, Canada. Links to her work and to our newsletter will be in our show notes. Also, be sure to check out the new and improved Council of Moms wherever you listen. As always, thanks for your messages. We read them all, and thanks for listening.
If you're looking for a podcast the whole family can enjoy, check out this new show, Constant Wonder Kids. It takes stories from the BYU Radio original podcast, Constant Wonder, and transforms them so kids can join in on the adventure. Constant Wonder Kids turns everyday moments into extraordinary nature explorations designed for curious kids and the grown-ups who love them. Together, you can discover fascinating facts and true stories about amazing people doing incredible things in nature. So join us as we dive deep into the ocean and meet an unexpectedly friendly whale shark, or cheer for tiny athletes at the International Hedgehog Olympic Games. Yeah, that's a thing. Constant Wonder Kids is perfect for road trips, bedtime listening, or when your brain's got an itch that needs to be scratched. New episodes drop Mondays, so tune in to Constant Wonder Kids on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.